University, the voice of Reichman University.
Beyond the uniform. Stories of strength, resilience, and rising to the occasion. With Rachel Safty and Rachel Iskandri.
Hey, it's Rachel Safty.
And Rachel Iskandri.
And welcome to the Beyond the Uniform podcast, where we tell you the untold stories of the heroes of Israel.
Today, we have a special guest who is an IDF reservist from a special unit who, after years of serving on the front lines, has become a passionate activist.
He's the founder of Katif El Katif, a reservist organization that advocates for equality in military service. And he recently made the headlines here in Israel for passionately confronting Defense Minister Israel Katz during a Knesset committee debate on the Haredi draft law, demanding answers on behalf of the soldiers still fighting in Gaza and honoring the friends he lost in this war. Jonathan, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. Well, I guess we can start with asking you a little bit about yourself, where you were born and where you grew up.
Sure. So my name is Jonathan Shalev. In Israel, everyone calls me Jonathan. I was born in Baltimore, Maryland, and I moved to Israel at the age of 4. And then I did here kindergarten in the first grade, and then in second grade, I moved back to America, this time to Manhattan, to the Big Apple. Mm-hmm. And then I lived there until, I finished seventh grade, then I moved back to Israel.
A lot of back and forth. Your parents were indecisive.
I'm 22. I have 2 siblings. My sister's in the army right now, mm-hmm. and my brother's 12. Amazing. Soon his bar mitzvah to Beis. And yeah, that's it. That's about
that's
myself.
You.
And I finished serving around half a year ago.
So during the war, when the war started, you were still in your...
Yeah, I was still in active
mandatory
duty.
Mandatory active duty. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, and you were in a special unit, but before we start talking about that, did you always know, with this back and forth being kind of American-Israeli, did you always feel Israeli, always know you're going to do the army, or how was that?
I mean, I always felt Israeli. My grandpa, he was Sgan Aluf, I think it's a chief sergeant in Israel's army.
High ranking.
Yeah, it's a very high rank.
It's a lieutenant colonel.
Lieutenant colonel. And he died in the front lines in Yom Kippur. Wow. in an act of bravery where he saved 33 soldiers on the back of his tank, and he got killed during that action. I think he was also rewarded with a very high medal from Israel's chief sergeant. And I mean, I always felt like that Israeli DNA when I lived in the United States. I went to a Jewish school as well. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, everything was... the Israeli flow was still there. And then when I moved to Israel, I mean, I never knew if I was going to be a combat soldier or no, because my dad didn't want me to.
Right. But that's a big thing.
Yeah,
people don't really understand how much, even in recent years, it's become more and more of a debate if boys are going to go. And there's so many parents that are against their children, their boys serving.
Especially parents that like have some kind of international background.
Right.
It's a very big thing with like soldiers that come from abroad.
So how was that?
I mean, my dad was as well. He was a captain in the army as well. Okay. He was a combat soldier himself. But I mean, for him, losing his dad at such a young age and sending his son to the military wasn't such a easy act.
Of course.
And I mean, it was my decision at the end of the day. I decided to become a combat soldier. And I think when I did a mechina, which is a year before the army, and during the mechina, I realized the importance of being a combat soldier in Israel. I mean, I would never estimate, or I would never even assume that such a war would break out during my service.
Yeah, of course.
But yeah, I mean, it was the easy choice.
We never could.
I was also.
Yeah, we were all in active duty.
I don't think anyone could have foreseen what was going to happen when the country.
No one could.
No.
Yeah.
But can you tell us a little bit about, you know, you went from being a soldier to a reservist in this war to an activist. Can you tell us a bit about what led you to where you are today? Maybe a few experiences from your military service.
So when I finished serving, I think it was after 3 years and 4 months of service, I finished my service because of an injury in the back. And I was supposed to stay one more year in the army. And when I finished serving, I felt like a real issue right now in the country with all the reserve soldiers right now. And I mean, as a young Israeli soldier who just finished serving mandatory service, I felt that there isn't any voice or any recognition towards the young reservists. I mean, a 29-year-old reserve soldier, he was a reservist for 6 years before the war. So, I mean, there's so many issues regarding young soldiers that aren't recognized that well. And I knew that I wanted to, when I finished serving, I wanted to start doing something on behalf of the country. I mean, maybe going to the Negev and moving on there. I mean, with a couple of friends from my squadron.
Yeah, honestly, it's so funny that you say that, because I know so many combat soldiers that it's like a passion of theirs to move to the south. The Negev is the south of Israel. Yeah. And to like open some kind of town or a kibbutz or something. Like, I've heard this so many times. It's really beautiful, honestly.
Very Israeli.
Yeah, it's very Israeli as well.
Very Zionist.
And then I realized, I mean, it's not... I was too optimistic. I mean, moving and building a town of...
No, why? It can still happen.
It's a dream. Indeed a dream.
I had a very good friend. His name was Jonathan Deutsch. He served with me. He died a week after we finished serving in the army. He died in a pigua, which is...
A terror attack.
And he died in a... It was a big agony for everyone surrounding him. I mean, he was very different from me. He was religious. He came from a very religious family from Beit Shan, which is in the periphery in Israel. And he didn't know English very well. Yeah. I mean, he never went away from Israel. He never flew to any country.
He never left Israel.
And before the war, when there was all the judicial reform, I mean, we had very big fights between us. And when the war broke out, I mean, everything changed, the whole concept. I mean, Israel right now has to understand, the Israeli government as well, that there's a new division in Israel. It's not the Bibi or no Bibi.
Right, left.
I mean, there's...
Religious.
The serving people and the people who don't serve.
Right. And you know, it's really interesting. It's something I heard from Micha Goodman, someone that I love to listen to. He said, you know, the 6th of October, we were so divided. I mean, if we remember... You know, the amount of left, right, pro-Bibi against Bibi. And the day the war started, it doesn't matter if you're Tel Avivi from the periphery, if you're right or left, if you're gay, if whatever it is, everyone of all types, of all backgrounds, went to fight together, yep. Except for one group. And that is why I think there is such a big, you know... dissonance and difference and tension, because even though I didn't go and fight in Gaza, I was still in reserves, you know, I was still, you know, we feel like everyone is joining, you know, we're putting politics aside, you know, we're fighting for our survival. There's terrorists in the country, you know, Israeli state sovereignty is being threatened. Everyone is going to fight. And yet, again and again, when our friends, when people like you are going time and time again, you don't get a break. You don't get to go start your life. You know, you don't get to go start to school. You don't. Our friend studying with us in university has to now basically redo a whole semester because he is needed once again for the third time for 3 consecutive months in Gaza. And there is a group of people
that just don't serve,
that are eligible, that are healthy, that are 18, exactly. As everyone else, you know?
And I mean, it's not only serving, as I said, it's not only combat soldiers. I mean, everyone who's serving the country, serving in intelligence, serving in
the spokesperson, serving
a lot of units. And I mean, and also serving as a citizen in Israel. I mean, paying your debts and working. And I mean, they don't do that. And as I told you before about Yonatan, I mean, I realized during the war that if we can fight together and shoulder to shoulder. I mean, that's Katef El Katef. That's the meaning of it.
That's the name of your organization.
That's the name of the organization. I think anything is possible. I mean, if you can fight, I mean, fighting is the worst thing possible. I mean, the agonies and atrocities of war, it's horrible.
Mm-hmm.
And the things that we saw. And I mean, if we can get past that together, I mean, we can do anything together. We can build a stronger country as well. And that's, I think, the reason I started Katef El Katef. Because of everything that was going on in my life, especially with that story. And I mean, I lost a lot of friends before him during the war. I mean, his story is very sad because he died in a fatal terror attack by Hamas soldiers as well. I mean, terrorists, not soldiers, but...
It was in Gaza?
No, it was in Bikat Yaden, in the Jordan Valley. Mm-hmm. And he was on the way to his fiancée.
No.
Yeah, horrible. It's very horrible.
And if you feel comfortable talking about it, what was the attack? How did he die?
He stopped in a bus stop. I mean, he waited for a friend he was supposed to pick up. And then they just drove past him. They shot him. He died. And it was a quick and easy death. But it was a very sad story as well.
So sorry.
Yeah, it's fine. I mean, it's been a
the amount of friends we've lost is insane.
It's insane.
Our age.
So that's the reason why I wanted to.
That's what inspired you
exactly
to start Katef Al Katef.
Yeah.
How did starting the organization come about? Like after that, like you're working with friends, family. What's the process of this?
So I met a very good friend of mine from home. His name is Ido, and like every great idea, we sat on a beer and
classic.
We talked
Israeli.
About what we can do, and I told him about maybe going to the south, as you said, or Katef Al Katef, and he told me that he's a reservist for the past year. I mean, he did 300 days of Miluim. Wow. And he told me that it's a huge burden on his life. I mean, he can't go study. He can't start, basically.
You can't start your life.
Yeah, you can't start
anything.
Your life. Anything.
How old is he?
He's 22 right now. Yeah, same age as me. And that was the starting point. And then the very next day, we went to the Knesset, which is the Israeli parliament, for anyone who doesn't know. And then when we went to the Knesset, and the whole idea of Katef Al Katef is not only to represent the young reservists, it's to also fight the law that basically Israel Katz is obligated to pass, which he calls it the enlistment law, and mm-hmm. it's the very opposite. And we went to the Knesset, and our whole point of the same day was to basically meet ministers and also Hakim, and we were supposed to meet them and basically ask them. We wanted to ask
lobby
them.
Yeah,
exactly.
Advocate
to lobby them, advocate
for your side, right? For
exactly. And then I understood the it's such a problematic issue. I mean, that they're so disconnected from all the soldiers, all
the real people that are involved in
exactly.
in the politics,
of course,
that they're
the,
making,
the decisions that are impacted.
I mean, listen,
these
5 out of 6 party leaders in Israel right now dodged service, which is
insane
in a country that has
mandatory enlistment law.
I mean, and also that a country that is obligated to the law. I mean, we're a democratic state,
of course.
And I mean, 5 out of 6 party leaders actually dodged service. And
once upon a time, we used to have people who were, I mean, the highest ranks in the army and people who actually cared so much about defending our nation. And now look where we are. I think it's also important to mention to our listeners, this is something we just don't talk about enough. I think outside of Israel, people don't understand how much the Haredi draft law is one of the main reasons, if not the main reason, that is causing for, you know, disconnect right now. So do you want to maybe just introduce it for those who don't know what it's about?
So there's a mandatory service law in Israel. And as the why I was drafted, my friends were drafted.
We were
drafted as well. And everyone in Israel, from the kibbutzim to Judea and Samaria, and to
the son of the richest and the son of the poorest, everyone at
the age of 18
is drafted. And I mean, this law seemingly doesn't apply to certain sectors. I mean, it simply doesn't apply to the Haredis, the ultra-Orthodox. I mean, since I think 1977,
since
the very beginning of the country.
Well, so since the mm-hmm. beginning of the country, there were Haredis who were enlisted. I mean, there was Torato Manuto, which means if they're very high ranked in their Torah studies, I mean, then they don't.
High ranked rabbis,
then they don't go to the military. And I mean, when Begin reached, I think it was 1977. I mean, then he basically exempted them from service.
All Haredim.
But even then, it wasn't the exact population that it is now, because obviously with the years, they've mm-hmm. gone and multiplied.
Yeah, all the ministers in Shas right now, which is a party in Israel.
Very religious serve. Party.
Everyone served there.
Wow. Because there are sects of religious Judaism that do enlist to the army.
Exactly. And
we also have units in the army. Look at Netzach Yehuda, who accommodate for, you know, you can still be Haredi and draft. And that I saw is one of the main messages of Katef El Katef, right? Because so many people today say, Haredi say, well, you know, if we do draft, we're going to become more secularized.
Right.
We're going to be
exposed.
You know, and so if you
the army gets commands from the government. Mm-hmm. And the army is obligated to do anything that the government tells them to do. If the government tells them, go to Yemen and fight in Yemen, the army doesn't have a right to say, I can't. They can say what the problems are going to Yemen and fight the Yemeni people, but they're obligated to go and fight as of opening new
units
in the army. And right now in the army, there's a new unit called Hashmonaim, which is a whole brigade in Israel that is only for the ultra, very, very ultra Orthodox Haredis. And the thing is, I mean, right now, because of the Supreme Court, the ultra-Orthodox do get the enlistment. How's it called?
They get the call for enlistment.
Yeah, they get the call, but they just don't enlist. Show up. And if you wouldn't enlist to the army when you get called,
you go to prison, you go to jail.
Yeah, you go to jail. The police would go to your house, knock on your door, pick you up. And that doesn't happen on their side. So there aren't a lot of soldiers over there. But the thing is, right now, as they're sending reserve soldiers for the fourth and fifth time right now this year, then, and I mean, it's an emergency call-up, they're exempting 100,000 Haredis from war during wartime. I mean, and this is supposed to be a very far right-wing government, right? By Smotrich, by Ben Gvir, I mean, it's just crazy. I think it's...
For people to understand what it means to call a reservist for the fourth or fifth time since the beginning of the war, it's literally, you know, you cannot have a continuous, you know, your job... Your family, a lot of miluimnikim reservists are the main providers for their families. Anything, your life is interrupted. We have so many people in our degrees and so many university students that are not able.
It's all ages. It's not just university. Exactly. It's 45, 55.
Exactly.
Like so many people that, you know, they just leave home again and again and again. They
and
have
it's
young
months
children.
At a time. It's not
months at a time. And when we have so many people that are able, and they're in the age of not even being reservists, just go do your obliged mandatory military service as everyone else does,
by law
as we all did,
right?
And so that's why it's so frustrating.
That's why I truly can't remark such an immoral act in Israel's history and in the political history. I mean, trying to pass such a law that would exempt, I mean, thousands during wartime. And I mean, we have a lot of problems everywhere. I mean, in Lebanon, in Syria, and Iran, and Gaza as well right now. I mean, and exempting 100,000 soldiers who can go on fight as well, switch us so we can, you know, get our break from fighting a year and a half. I mean, fighting a year and a half is a crazy amount of time.
Yeah, of course. The mental toll, the physical.
Beyond, I mean, you finish your mandatory service and went straight into reserves. I remember when I left the army, like I got my day of release. The next day I was in the army.
Yeah, it's great.
Because we're in war.
And also it's a time of national and economic crisis and security crisis as well. So.
And if everyone doesn't come to help, you know, like...
What does it say about our, I mean, future here? If right now we're going on and fighting again. And I mean, as we said in the beginning, there's secular Jews, religious Jews, also... Druze, Arabs, I mean, Arabs enlist
Christians.
Arabs and Christians enlist to the army in higher percentages than Haredis. And I mean, they're Jewish, the Haredis. So what does it say about the state of Israel? I mean,
the Jewish homeland.
Yeah,
like,
Jewish
what does
homeland.
It say?
What does it say about us? I mean, our future here is very, is very not predictable. I mean, if the Haredis won't enlist as well. And
So what steps are you taking? You know, you've kind of taken this upon yourself. Maybe tell us a bit about how it was at the Knesset.
So it all started by me and Ido going to the Knesset, saying that we're representing right now thousands. I mean, it was a day after we sat on a beer and we started Katef Katef. And then, I mean, they believed us. Some of them believed us. And then I remember, I think it was Avi Dichter. He's the Minister of Agriculture. Mm-hmm. And he told us, I don't believe you. And then he showed me...
What do you mean, believe you?
That we represent so many people, because there's a lot of organizations that represent reservists.
Mm-hmm.
And we told him that we represent young reservists. And then he told me to show him the WhatsApp chat. And then I remember I told Ido that we were in some deep shit right now.
We need to make a WhatsApp chat.
And then I send opened the invite. I opened the WhatsApp chat of the, it's called Zichonim, and it's everyone in Zichon. And it was like 15,000 people in the chat, many groups. And then he was like, wow, come to my office right now. Text me afterwards. So we went to his office. And then the whole day was, we were supposed to try and also understand what their position is mm-hmm. about the current law that they're trying, that Israel Katz is trying to pass. Because it was right in between when Gallant was fired, not for his failure of being the Minister of Defense during October 7th. It was because he sent out 7,000 enlistments to the Haredis.
He was the previous Minister.
Minister of Defense.
Now we have...
A
Minister of External Affairs Defense Minister. Very interesting.
And then at the end of the day, I heard that there's a Knesset member. His name is Ohad Tal from the Tzionut Datit, which is, he's a religious Jewish person living in Israel. And he's supposed to represent basically the... It's very important to say that the Tzionut Datit in Israel, which is
the national Zionist.
It's very complicated to say.
They're religious, and yet they're very Zionist. They serve.
They had a very, very tough burden on themselves. I mean, the right, they basically represent the right-wing Zionists, the national religious Jews, whatever you call them, Tzion Datit. Mm-hmm. And we met with him. And then he told us that he agrees, I mean, that he won't be able to vote. And then I was like, I was confused that, I mean, he's the first person the whole day, the entire day, to tell us that he won't vote for the new law that is trying to, that Katz is trying to pass. And then I remember telling Ido that this is some very crazy news right now. And then we told him, are you sure? He told us, yeah, sure. And then I asked him if we can make a video with him. And he told us that we need to bring in new lemons so we won't squeeze the same lemons over and over. I mean, very weird rhetorical way to...
Okay, to say no.
And then at the evening, I remember I went back home and I told my mom, what should we do with this news? I mean, we have some crazy news. No one knows what Ohad Tal's position is right now. And she told me, I mean, you're 22, so go out, send it to the news and force him to say to his
people. Yeah, to force him to stick to his word.
And then I did
also
the same thing. I did that. And then I texted Ohad Tal, thank you. I mean, 1,000 young reservists are saluting to you right now.
Oh,
and they told me, no, don't send it out. Don't text it out yet. I told him, I mean, it's too late. And then the very next day, Ohad Tal's basically front office said that he's going to say no. He's not going to vote for the new law. And then I understood that with the WhatsApp group, I mean, with only 20 people in, my grandma, my parents, my family, Ido's family, anything is possible.
Wow.
And then I truly believe that we have the power to...
Make a change,
yeah. Exactly. And then from then on, I mean, the rest is history. And then our main event in the Knesset was, I went very many times to the Knesset as I was doing reserve duty as well. And then when I finished my reserve duty, which was, I think, January, there was a new, in the Foreign Affairs Committee, it was the first time Katz appeared there. And I mean, then I went crazy, I went loco. And then they kicked me out and Katef.
You were forcibly removed by a security guard as you were screaming at the Israeli defense minister.
Yeah.
First of all, thank you.
I mean...
Thank you. You represent a lot of us. And I think it's important for our listeners to understand it's so crucial. And when I saw your video, I was actually surprised because it's the first time, you know, we're not used to seeing a reservist... You know, going out there and screaming it loud. This is what we believe. A lot of the opinions that Israelis today have about the Haredi draft law is, yes, everyone should serve. But they're not listening to the people who are being the most, messed up because of this law. And that's you. That's what you represent.
Yeah, I mean, I understood that only a couple of days after. But during that foreign committee's
session
that I was in, Inon Azulay, he's I'm not sure if he's a minister or a Knesset member, but he wasn't sitting in his seat in his chair. And then he said that only by dialogue we can reach an agreement. And I was like, Did anyone ask me if I want to go to reserves duty? Did anyone ask me if I want to enlist in the army? Did anyone ask my friends who died in the war if they can? And then I just couldn't hold it anymore. I mean, I totally broke out. I mean, anyone who knows me knows it wasn't staged. I mean, a lot of people told me that they think it was staged. And truly, I was just so angry at the moment. And then when I realized that all eyes are on me, I said, I mean, this is the time to actually show the voice of the, also the young reservists, but everyone who serves in Israel. And I mean, those yellings of mine, they reached a very high altitude. And I felt that afterwards, the change is on us, the people who saw the burdens of war, the people who fought, the people who lost dear friends, the people who paid the very high prices of war during the past year. And then I really felt that we can make a big change together as well. I mean, yeah, so.
I mean, you became a voice of the people. So many people share your sentiment and your feelings. And unfortunately, it's with so many things in the country, so many different topics and things that are discussed by these members of Knesset and people that are making the decisions that are very disconnected. Like, it's such a crazy feeling that, like, the people that you elected or didn't elect aren't doing at all what you're requesting that they do, like begging them to do.
Exactly.
Well, can you tell us a little bit more about the next steps, I guess, and what, how you see Katef al Katef moving forward?
Yeah, sure. So after that same foreign committee session, I mean,
infamous one.
Yeah, exactly. I'm very bad at social media and, you know, WhatsApping. I mean, so we had to make a Katef al Katef, an actual organization. I mean, we had to split up. Everyone had to get their own
job description. Yeah,
exactly. And then
what are we doing?
And then we said that we also have to exempt ourselves from other organizations. So not only that we are young, but also that we're not afraid to make the right decision. I mean, people sometimes in the political arena don't want to say the right thing. They want to say the thing that is best for them.
The political thing to say. Exactly.
And I'm 22. I'm not a Knesset member. I'm not a minister as well. And I'm also a reservist. And I knew that the next steps that we're going to take are not going to be nice towards some people. They're not going to be very...
Welcome.
Yeah. And I mean, so... Those were our next steps. Were we went to Israel Katz's house. We went 2,000 reservists and young reservists and and also some mechinaim, which is the people
prior,
the gap year between
it's a gap year that is supposed to prepare 18-year-olds that are the year before the army to draft, and they teach you all kinds of values and about units and stuff like that.
And so, I mean, I don't think that there was ever a scene in Israel since the 2011.
The cottage cheese crisis.
Yeah, the cottage crisis in Tel Aviv, where so many young people went and together they protested and had their voice heard as well. So, I mean, it was very optimistic. And then I understood that we have like an amazing power to. One of the things when you run an organization is realizing how you make people go and act and do a certain act. I mean, it's very hard to bring people out to the streets, especially after, I mean, everything we saw before the war. I mean, because people went out and protested for years in Israel against Bibi. So, I mean, I think that the people who do the gap year in Israel, and also young reservists who aren't away in Thailand somewhere, it's very easy to bring them out. I mean, especially if it's around a topic such as the serving one.
That matters so much
to Israel's national security as well. And then after we did the same, the protest at Israel Katz's house, and afterwards he canceled the meeting with me. So that's a very important thing to say. I mean, he found time to go to a ultra-Orthodox wedding where they started singing that Namut Velo Nidges right in front of his face, but not to meet an Israeli combat soldier
We prefer to die than to draft.
Exactly. It's a mantra that they sing.
That they started singing
right
during the war, I mean, it's, which is also very crazy. And then afterwards, we went to Bnei Brak, which is, I think, the...
It's one of the most religious, ultra-Orthodox religious communities in Israel.
And that's the the homeland of everyone who sings the mantra. We will die and we will not go to the army. And then what we wanted to do there, we wanted to bring basically people who got injured during wartime. I mean, amputees, people who were injured badly. I mean, also got brain damage as well. And we wanted to bring them out and walk behind them and basically show the people in Bnei Brak also the very high prices we paid in our body and also in our soul, and also to have our voice heard. I mean, it's very important to never let the enlistment law topic to never let it go off topic. I mean, it has to always stay in the media, always stay in the
cycle,
news,
of course.
And the cycle of the yeah, and the cycle. So that was our very last thing that we did
as part of the movement
and right now we did a very big march with another organization which is called El Adegal. They're also right now they're a political movement. They're trying to get voted in the next Knesset, and we did a very very big march in Jerusalem. I think it involved around 10,000 to 20,000 people.
Wow.
Yeah. And I mean, it was the first time that we saw religious people come and march or protest against the government that is supposed to basically amplify their voice.
Mm-hmm. That's actually a very important point. I mean, about religious people.
Exactly.
Right? Because they're religious. They serve, you know, I've actually seen, there's a very powerful picture of this Haredi man, very Haredi, with a gun on and madim and uniform on the way to miluim, and that just proves that you can be both,
yeah,
right?
Of course, really. I mean, there is a big population that does enlist. Like, it's not just them, which I also know that it's a big conversation amongst them of this is not us, like these ultra orthodox that refuse to draft. Like, that's not what we believe in. Like, don't include us in this also. So,
yeah.
It's, I mean, also we have Muslim soldiers that pray five times a day.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and we also have Muslim soldiers who died in the war.
Of course, yeah. We have
Bedouin brigade.
Bedouin, we have
Christians
that were kidnapped. Yeah. I mean, the amount of people of all cultures, of all political ideologies, of all religious spectrums that are involved, fighting and dying in this war, except for Haredi Jews.
Yeah,
I mean, when you think about it, and when you put it all on the table. You know, it's so sad. It's insanity.
It is. It really is.
It's insanity. So how are you getting to these people? Is Katif El Katif, ever since you kind of went viral, is it growing? Are people coming to you? Like, how does that work?
It's very hard to estimate how many people are in an organization. I mean, we brought out thousands to the Minister of Defense's house, and we went by the tens or the hundreds to Bnei Brak.
Mm-hmm.
So I estimate that in the media and the social media where we have a big amount we have a lot of followers, we have a strong network, a strong base, and the organization is very big. I mean, I also see a lot of people who they see me on the street and they tell me, wow, you're the person from this video, from that video. I mean, that's the power of networking. So I do feel that that our voice is...
That's how we got to you.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it is.
Through my mother.
Just funny. And I feel that our voice is heard, which is the important thing. I mean, I always say that I wish that next year I'll be a regular citizen who does reserve duty and not a reservist who's also
sometimes
to be a citizen. Yeah, yeah, I mean... I want to start studying next year. I hope it will.
Wow.
Yeah. And our next steps, I mean, it's a question. We should take very... I mean, right now, these next couple of days are very crucial to... I mean, also the hostages, also to the all the reservists in Israel. I mean,
right, it's a very crucial day. Right, of course, there's a big wave right now of
a lot of people.
I think I'll be one of them in the next days. And I mean... We'll have to see. We'll have to see what our next steps are. I mean, I'm very, very optimistic because I think Peres said it once. Peres was the prime minister of Israel. He was also the president a couple of years ago. He said that optimistic people and sad people, they live the same. They die the same way, but they live different lives. So, I mean, if I'm not going to be optimistic, I mean, then my work is useless. I mean, I can drown it in a, or throw it in a trash can and go and be a everyday Jonathan, fly to Thailand, meet my friends from my squadron. I mean, I can do all those kind of things. And I think that our next step is going to be a very, very strong one, of one that everyone is going to hear. I mean, we'll do some crazy things in Israel if
we're waiting
the same situation.
Amazing. Yeah. Well, we're happy we caught you in just in the beginning. And so you're still doing a lot of active miluim. Like, you're how often does that work? Like, are you were you in Gaza for months at a time, and then you come back?
I mean, I only did 60 days. I mean, only 60 days is a lot.
Only.
Yeah. So I did 60 days, but that was right after I finished my mandatory service, and also I did a couple of months more than I needed in the military, and so basically I was almost 3.5 years in the military, and then I did 60 days of miluim, of reserve duty, and then my next duty is supposed to be in the beginning of July. I'm not sure yet where actively it's going to be and how, but it's going to happen. And if Israel decides to go and basically break the siege in Gaza, then I'll probably also be there. So
I see.
Yeah.
Well, we wish you the best of luck.
Thank you. Yeah, you and everyone with you.
There's a question we always ask to every guest at the end of the podcast, and we'd love to ask you. If you could say anything to the people outside of Israel right now, what's the one message you have to send to them?
To everyone, to the Jewish people outside of Israel?
To everyone.
Yeah, all right. So it's a very tough question.
It's a very tough question.
We're putting the weight of the world on your shoulders.
You can think about it all you want.
I mean, I think I have to say that even though we may seem divided at some times in Israel, and we may seem not obligated to some current international laws, or we may seem that we are terrified to do something, Israel is a very strong country. Israel is a very strong country, and no one can beat, I mean, there may be armies that are bigger than us, but no one can beat our willpower and our ideology to survive. I mean, that's the thing that keeps us here. I mean, that's the whole point of being a Zionist. And the country that I lost friends, very dear ones during the war, I mean, I'm obligated to make Israel a better place and a more hopeful place as well. I mean, losing friends at such a, I mean, by the dozens at such a young age is, I mean, not many people understand how it feels. And my goal is to, at the end of the day, to live in a better Israel, in one that is more obligated to its citizens, to one that is more obligated to international affairs, to one that is more obligated to have to live in a better place. I mean, the Middle East is very complicated. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's my
your message.
No, it's a beautiful message.
Right. Amazing message. We really are truly a resilient type of people. Well, thank you so, so much, Jonathan, again.
Thank you for having me.
For being here. It was an absolute pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you guys so much for listening to the Beyond the Uniform podcast on Audioversity. I'm Rachel Escondri.
And I'm Rachel Safty. And we'll see you next time with another untold story.
Beyond the Uniform. Stories of strength, resilience, and rising to the occasion. With Rachel Safty and Rachel Escondri.